Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a podcast by two dry millennials learning to live their most authentic lives after booze.
I'm gonna get into it. All right. This week, we're welcoming Jack Max, one of our closest friends of over 10 years, and we're together in the same room celebrating her one-year soberversary in Portland this weekend. So I thought it would be fun if we all say hi and then go around and tell the audience how we first met and how we know each other. Give them some background context. So, Jack, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for being here in my living room.
This is super normal for me, being in your living room.
Yeah. Jack and I used to live together here in this apartment for like 3 years.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Kaylee, how did you meet Jack?
So I met Jack as I've met everyone, which is through Ashley.
Thank you, Ashley.
And I remember the first time we met, we were at one of Ashley's birthday parties. I don't think it was her 21st, but we were definitely like drinking champagne and having wine. And I think it was the one where she made us all wear like unicorn horns, like little party hats.
Oh, yeah. Our videographer, Michelle, was there, too.
Oh, yeah. We have a videographer today, too. You guys are so legit. And we were outside, and it was, like, at the point in the night where everyone was kind of mingling. So, anyway, we were, like, outside hanging out, and I saw Jack and wanted to, like, make friends with her because I knew she was one of Ashley's really good friends, and I was definitely wanting to, like, get inundated into the friend group. And I saw her tattoo, and I remember being like, oh my god, that's a cool tattoo. What does it say? Does it say have come at me?
That's what she said. Which, like, I loved that she said that, but that was a joke that everyone had already made. It says have at me.
And it's from Peter Pan,
and it's from
right?
Peter Pan. Yeah. But so many people made fun of me because it was during the come at me bro era.
Oh no.
So I got a lot of like, ooh, come at me bro.
Yeah. And then I think that was the end of that. You were like,
I don't like
fuck
you.
Yeah. I don't fucking like you. And then after I moved up to Portland and had like just kind of gone through a breakup and didn't really know anyone here, Ashley was like, Jack moved to Portland too. You should reach out to her. So we went and met up at like some bar and
church
just,
bar?
I don't think it was church bar. We definitely went to church bar a lot, but this was like some weird sports bar that my roommate Tara worked at.
But it was kind of up there by church bar. Was that?
Yeah, maybe.
And it was like on a side street.
It was on
the
side
the
street.
Garage open?
Yeah. It had like a big garage open and they would like watch soccer games there.
That's
or like
so
play
weird
soccer games. I know. Then we talked to each other on Facebook after that. I was like, I had fun hanging out. And then it's like, well, what are you doing tonight? And then I had her over. We got like Domino's pizza and drank wine. And
she had like a fire going.
Yeah.
A fucking rug in front of the fire. Mm-hmm. She wooed the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Kaylee knows how to host. I feel like that's like on your gravestone.
That was it.
She knew how to host.
I love hosting.
That was literally it. We were like in our mid-20s.
Yeah.
I was anyway. Yeah. And we went out with these like 21-year-olds and they were like taking shots all night and Kaylee and I were like, like we don't take, we're past shots. We're like at the age where we're
like
past
a bottle and a half of wine.
Yeah. We do wine almost exclusively. Shots were so long ago, but we just wanted to be hip. Just wanted to stay hip and we got fucking wrecked.
Oh my God. There was also while we were there, this group that was there for like a someone's 21st birthday and they had bought like all this alcohol and I remember the bartender trying to give the guy the drinks and he was like, what are these? Like, we didn't order them, like we don't want these. And he was like, you paid for it, like someone came up here and ordered Hennessy and like paid for it. And so he like gave it to me and I was like, I'm trying to give it away to other people. So I was like running around asking like, does anyone want this Henny? Like I was calling it Henny all night.
Yuck.
I was like,
I don't remember that. I think what I remember is us leaving there and going to a house, breaking into a house party because we walked in and somebody was like, hey, who are you guys? And we were like, we know John. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
We just like made up a name. We know John. And they're like, oh, cool. And they like let us in.
Super nice. very accommodating people.
Yeah. Let us drink their stuff. There was like a fucking drum circle or some shit. I don't remember.
Yeah, like a band. Yeah.
It was like Portland.
Yeah. And then we went back to the church bar and we were dancing on the dance floor. But some dude put Kaylee's fingers in his mouth.
Yo, no,
Saul?
Yeah.
Was his name Saul?
Solomon. Some random guy named Solomon was like trying to get freaky on the dance floor. He like picked you up and then he like...
Oh yeah, he picked me up and smashed my head on something.
And he put his fingers in my mouth.
Put his fingers... I thought it was the other way around.
I don't know anymore.
Could have been either.
So after this night, it was like set in stone, solidified that you were to be roommates.
We did literally every single thing together.
Yeah. And then a spot opened up here and Jack moved in. We like just really got along. We hung out and watched a bunch of TV. We started watching like Golden Girls. And
yeah. We were trying to watch Buffy, but Kaylee gets really stressed out. She gets really invested in characters and has a hard time watching scary things happening.
There's a lot of series that I just stop watching when something I don't like is happening. Like a couple is like... on the outs, or like someone breaks up,
like this is too real. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm just like, I just want everyone to be having a great time forever. And but yeah, that's how we know each other. So we like met when we were in our early 20s, and just kind of like were friends with the same friend. So it would be in like similar places, but didn't really connect until later on in like mid 20s when we both lived in Portland and then lived together. What about you, Katie? When did you first meet Jack?
I remember the day. That
I remember.
At Outside Strength. Bowling Alley.
Is that the one that burned down?
Yeah.
Oh.
Remember the bowling alley that burned down?
You were I remember the bowling alley. I don't remember meeting you.
Oh, you had your Dixie haircut.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't know who you were, but everybody was like, everyone was telling me in that moment that you had been around me.
Okay.
But I never met you. You were like... Oh, you're Jack. I've been wanting to meet you for so long. You're like, because everybody had talked about you. And I said something really mean to you and you laughed at it. And that's...
So it's probably why I can't remember is because I was like, you fucking bitch. And then just moved on. But honestly...
Maybe it's not that nice to people first go around.
But when I remember really spending time with you for the first time, you invited me to my boyfriend's ex-girlfriend's apartment.
Whoa.
Amanda. I just think that like the context of that's really funny.
Yeah.
And basically who had like her and I were like unspoken, like sworn enemies just because that's what you do when you're 20. And now she's like a lifelong friend to me. And so are you. It's so funny. But yeah, I just remember you inviting me over to the Florence apartments. Michelle and I went. And we hung out in the studio apartment and we drank a shit ton of wine and smoked cigarettes inside.
Yeah.
Of the apartment.
The Florence apartments are so gross. Like known cockroaches.
They were also like, I remember Justine living there. Yeah. And being like, God, it's so cool that they live there.
Yes. Dude, same.
And you get invited inside and you're like, don't sit.
Never mind.
Yeah. Like how many people have died in here is literally how it felt. And like the bed, like legit unfolded from the wall.
Yeah. They had a Murphy.
Yeah. Murphy bed.
It's like a thing. And I'm not a city girl, right? Like I didn't grow up in a big city where that's a thing.
That's not a thing.
No, nope.
That's not a thing in the big cities. Okay. I've never seen a Murphy bed outside of that place.
Yeah. And I just remember like immediately just like fucking all of us getting along so well. And then next thing I knew, you were living with us for a couple months.
So I do that. I was homeless for a short period of time and Michelle and Katie let me live on their couch for like 2 months or something. And that, so much time has passed. I mean, we were what, fucking 21, 22 years old?
That was actually 10 years ago, almost exactly.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. Dude, that's wild. I looked back on that for so long as the best time in my life. Because you guys, we did fucking nothing and
everything.
Like, you know, when we were that young, it just felt like I was like when you're watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm sleeping on the couch and we're getting fucking high and going to Circle K and getting fucking munchies and watching Sons of Anarchy and fucking.
Oh,
drooling
on our,
over
on
that,
our
dude.
Individual laptops watching.
Oh yeah,
shows.
From across
because
the
we
room.
Didn't, Michelle, so our friend Michelle is here too. Hi, Michelle.
We love you. She's our photographer for the day.
So she and I lived in this literal like 600 square foot apartment, 2 bedroom, 1 bath. Can you believe that rent was $595 a month?
That's nuts. fucking nuts.
Insane. Anyways, so we didn't have a functioning television because we didn't have anything in that apartment.
None of us had a TV for a really long time. Yeah. We always watched shows on our laptops.
Yeah, we just had like beat up laptops. And so,
yeah.
Anyways, and I just remember like us being on, like, you and Michelle cuddled up on one couch, me like sprawled out on the other couch, and we would just watch TV and like take photos of each other, smoke weed, eat fucking whatever we wanted to.
Mac and cheese cups.
Oh yeah. And I think that at that point too, I mean, we were going out, but we weren't drinking as heavily. We were more so smoking weed at that point.
I want to say yes and, because that is when I learned that you can rally.
Oh yeah, I can
motherfucker.
Rally.
Shoot, we would go to the Bermuda in Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And not even the Bermuda, we'd go to fucking Trash Henry's and...
Oh, Lord.
Unsafe John Henry's. That's not a very catchy name. That's not a catchy name. Fucking, I don't know. Anyway, John Henry's. And we knew Katie or Michelle, somebody knew the bartender, ditto.
We felt like we knew everyone.
Yeah. And so we got free drinks, all of the No, we didn't get free drinks, you guys. We got free drop shots.
We paid for drinks, but we got like doubles and overserved consistently.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't getting anything for free because I was tipping like 50% all of the time. Like,
I almost never spend money there, I swear.
One time I got given a Klonopin there and I... Anyways, that's a different episode.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, first time I... Yeah. Anyways, last time, first time.
Well, I just remember we would walk because we could walk back to their apartment from there, and Katie would just be puking over her shoulder. What, mid conversation, like, oh my God, did you see that guy who blah blah?
Yeah. And then it'd be like, and it just is like, it was just no big deal. My stomach was just really sensitive to all of the fucking poison I was putting into it. It's fine. But anyways, and during that time, Jack was like, kind of like in between places, figuring out what she was going to do next. And I just remember her obsession with knives at that point and with the Briar store, Briar shop in the mall.
Oh my God, I love that place.
Oh no, I did that in front of people.
And she'd be like, look at this fucking trinket that I bought today. And she'd be like playing with a butterfly knife also in the other hand. And I'm like, holy fucking shit, you were so cool.
I almost wore my knife necklace that Joshua bought me today, and I'm so glad I didn't. I'm so, so glad
I definitely didn't. Bought Jack knives for presents.
Oh, the knives Achilles got me for presents are fucking sick. She bought me throwing knives, and she bought me a fucking karambit.
Karambit is nice.
Here's your karambit.
So fucking lethal if you use it wrong.
It's like a velociraptor claw.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like, and then ever since then, we've just stayed in like really good touch over the last 10 years. Wow.
I think that's a good sign that you haven't burned any bridges with like people that you've lived with. You've all made them into like long-term friends.
Yeah.
I remember one night sleeping with Michelle because I had just gotten my nipples pierced. So I was sleeping with Michelle in her bed, but I had drank too much. So I would lay down, and then I would get up and go puke, and then I'd come back and lay down, and I would run back to the bathroom puking, and I remember somebody saying, oh, we would just see her naked, just running back from Michelle's bathroom to the bathroom.
That checks out. Okay, anyways, that's a good turning point. So now that every one of the listeners knows about how we know Jack, what about Jack? Like, how do you know yourself? Who are you? Tell us about yourself.
I have been sober for a whole year today.
Yes, that's exciting.
That is so funny. The question, like, who is Jack? I'm like, man. Yeah. But yeah, I've been sober for a year. We were celebrating Kaylee's 1 year anniversary just after I got sober.
It was my 2 years on Monday.
Oh shit, yeah. So, like, yeah, literally just a few days. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my God, Kaylee.
Hi.
Yeah. Let us please take a moment to
recognize. We will take a moment to do that.
Yeah, and we went to the farm and it was really cute. And I literally stopped drinking because I've had a bad stomach my whole life. And it dawned on me at 30 years old that, you know, if I want this to get better, maybe I should cut out the thing that is actually poison. So I didn't quit drinking because I put myself in life-threatening circumstances or because I was paying more for it than the money that I actually had or because it was literally just a tool to fuel actual hatred I had for myself. But my tummy hurts.
Yes. Yeah.
That is what I
stopped. And the rest just comes along with it.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I get that for sure. So what do you do? Where do you live?
I live in Portland. also in Portland, Oregon. And I do lots of different things for money. I don't have a regular job. I do some commercial production and producing commercials. And I walk dogs, True Mood sometimes.
And you recently just like did a whole cross country trip by yourself in a fucking car, which is crazy. And before that, you're in like traveling Europe. And then before that,
during COVID,
you were living in New York. So like Jack's our cool, like nomad, like just always fucking figures it out and like gets to see the whole entire world.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that. I'm trying to deflect because reminding me of my accomplishments makes me very uncomfortable.
Yeah. For sure.
But you're here to talk about them.
Thank you. Yeah, I did all those things. I lived in New York and I did for 2 years and it was the fucking best. I absolutely love New York. And when you're like an active user, you're in New York, BFFs. There's so much fun shit to do. And then, yeah, I went to Europe and that was cool. And then the pandemic.
Where were you when that happened?
Brighton, right? The little gay beach town.
Yeah, it was super, super cute little place. I was there staying with a girl I was dating. We were having like this cute little romantic weekend and her family back in London was like, this is
serious.
This is serious. Yeah. And I mean, there were thousands of people out in the lanes, like all the shops were open. It's such a cute place. You just walk down the lanes and there's shops on either side with no doors. You know what I mean? There's just people and shit in the streets and it's just so cute. And, you know, this is fun. And then she went back to London and we were going to quarantine together in Brighton at a different place. The night before she was going to come, they shut everything down. And so I quarantined for 4 weeks by myself in a 5-story mermaid themed house on the beach in Brighton.
I remember getting those pictures.
Yeah. Every room had, it was actually mermaid themed. Like the blankets had flippers. You know what I mean? Like you put your legs inside the blanket and there were mermaid flippers. And like the linoleum in the kitchen was pool water. You know what I mean? So it looked like you're walking on a pool. And there were like, every room had different mermaid wallpaper. And like there was one room, it was the pink room. There was a mermaid playing a guitar. Just like all over the wall. And the one in the kitchen was big drunk mermaids, like martini mermaid,
of
and a
course,
wine mermaid.
Because a drunken mermaid, it wouldn't be a mermaid house without a fucking drinking mermaid.
A woman underwater also holding a glass of liquid. For sure. What is this, fucking SpongeBob? Like, SpongeBob rules only.
Oh my god. I love it.
Going fucking crazy in that house by yourself for like, while there's this pandemic happening, surrounded by mermaids.
And then Jack flies home and she has to quarantine before she can go to her parents' house because she just traveled across the world. And
it was Easter.
I remember it was Easter and I brought her Easter breakfast.
It was so cute. Yeah. She like, you know, because at the time, if you came within 6 feet of a person,
both of you were dead
fucking meat. So she like me from inside the house, like waving through the window, she put this like little platter of food on the porch.
I was like so happy to have a friend back because most of my friends didn't live in the area anymore. And I was fucking lonely and I was drinking so heavily in 2020. And I was just like, yay. Honestly, I was probably thinking like a new fucking drinking buddy. Woo.
How else could we possibly get through this?
I know. Yeah. I know. And then, yeah, that's so interesting. And then I actually quit drinking like 4 months later. Yeah. And speaking of alcohol, Jack, what was your relationship with alcohol? Like, where did it start? How did you, like, in the day, like, OG drinking days?
Yeah, when was it? Do you remember, like, the first time you drank?
I do remember the first time I drank. I was, like, 18 years old, and I was living in the Olive Garden, where everyone's origin story begins.
and, like, shitty food service.
Yeah, we would call it OGHS, because it was so fucking dramatic working there. And I went to a party, and this guy that I had a crush on at the time, we were like in a flirting whirlwind at the time.
Did he work at Olive Garden?
No. I met him through Amanda.
Okay.
He came to my 18th birthday and I met him there. And it was like, I was dating Joshua and I was like, but this boy is so cute and funny and nice. And then Josh and I broke up and I was like, Brian, what is up, my friend?
Hello.
And it did not last long. We didn't I don't even think we might have kissed. If we did, I don't remember it. But he was the kind of guy who was like, I went to a party, my friends picked me up, went to this OG party, and I drank too much. But I called Brian to pick me up. And he was the kind of guy that like would be like, yeah, totally, I'm on my way. Mm-hmm. And he came in his little truck. He had a truck forever. And he came and picked me up. And we sat outside my parents. I was still living with my parents. We sat outside my parents' house. Whipped my head in his lap, and I was talking to my liver, just like, I'm so sorry, liver. And he just like let me fucking blah, 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 blah. Oh, until
what a good guy.
He was so fucking cool.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, yeah, Brian.
Our group of friends that we grew up with, we all had a rough go, I think, with alcohol, especially in the younger days. And especially, I wouldn't say especially us girls, but I think that we were not in a healthy environment a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So we were all drinking. Yeah, we in our group of friends, we drank a lot. We partied a lot. When I was 17, 18 years old, we were playing beer pong and doing shots at people's houses because we were all underage. And I don't know, somebody somewhere worked at a liquor store, and then other people would turn of age and start working at the liquor store. And
always had a connection at the liquor store.
I moved to New Jersey because I needed some space. And when I came back, things were almost exactly where I left them, collecting dust. All of my friends were doing the same thing. Everybody was still living with the same people. I moved in with Ashley. Her and I fell back into the same bullshit, which was fun. Fairy world. And, just like romanticizing our cute little 20-year-old lives.
And your apartment was cute.
And our apartment was cute. And we had a good time. I think we had a good time there. It's clouded with being young and all the stupid shit you're doing all the time. And I was self-harming at the time. And drinking was making it so much worse. I started self-harming in Jersey. And I was very... I only had two friends and my uncle, and those were the only people I spent my time with. So like nobody was checking in on me. Nobody, like, I remember cutting for the first time and one of my two friends was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, cat scratch. And he was like, Jack, whose cat? You know what I mean? Just like one of those friends who's like, what the fuck are you talking about? What is it? You know? And I don't think I said anything. I remember calling my mom from New Jersey and being like, so I'm doing this thing and it's starting to make me nervous. And she was like, well, we're going to Costco today. Some chicken. And I was like,
mom is like the sweetest little angel. She just like bops around in her garden.
And yeah. And she was like, we're just not going to address that.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, and she's definitely going to listen to this. By the way, my mom says hi.
Hi.
To all three of you. Michelle says to you too. And she is so.
Myrna.
She's Myrna. She's so excited to hear this episode, so I'm going to be gentle with my speech. Gentle starting now. I came back and off of the races. I mean, that's when we met, and I dated Casey, my second boyfriend, who's the fucking worst person, the worst person. And he drank whiskey as like a... It was part of his personality. You know what I mean? Like
I had one of those in my life too.
Yeah. Where it's like he identifies with whiskey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I became that before I quit drinking. Like the last few years of being an alcoholic, I became the whiskey guy and identifying too much with that identity. Which, we were just drinking. We were just drinking. That was it. That's all we were doing. And we were doing mean things to each other as friends and not recognizing that it was mean. And we were asking too much of each other and we were not being kind. And that, I think, just because I was at such a young age, was who I became. I became that person. And I was just angry. And I was angry because I was always told who I was. So I stopped making authentic decisions. Mm-hmm. I just kept playing the role and being the person that everyone kept telling me I was. Mm-hmm. And it made me mean, it made me angry, it made me dangerous, and I spent all of my 20s, every day of my 20s like that. I remember living with Kaylee, I almost went to rehab, do you remember that? Mm-hmm. I went to Serenity Lane, and I was hungover, and she was like, we need you inpatient, and I was like, I'm fucking serious. Me? I'm just in my 20s. This is normal.
It's fine.
Yeah. But that was the thing, too. I mean, all of us were so fucking drunk that it looked normal.
Well, yeah. And I was going to the hospital on a Wednesday, so yeah, it was just like there was no semblance of someone looking from the outside and being...
Yeah. Well, and the people we were hanging out with, the people we were meeting them in bars. And so all of us were doing that.
And I also think that it's like a really large portion of the population in their 20s that are making that same decision.
Absolutely.
So like,
yeah, yeah.
It's so normalized.
There are a third of people who are not, right? And those are people who, you know, at first seemingly have their lives together. They get married pretty young. They have kids pretty young. And then next thing I know, they're reaching out to me on Dry Hard Pod saying like, hey, I started drinking really heavily. Like, everyone, I feel like, goes through it and is going through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like at different times in their life.
Yeah.
Because it's, because there's a lot of money in it. And so it is available and it is acceptable and it is kind of nudged at you.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Drink responsibly.
Forced on you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But only fucking responsibly.
Yeah. And I'm like,
how?
I don't understand what you're saying, but I would like a double, please.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm going to drive home. Thank you.
Oh yeah. Bye.
I can't even think about getting behind the wheel like when I have in my life. Like, it's a disgrace.
Oh my God. So Danny and I actually talked about this. Yeah. Danny and I talked about this. Kayla's partner and I talked about this when we went camping a few weeks ago. He came to my house. We were going to drive to Portland, and he didn't have his license at the time, so I was driving. He's 20.
Yeah, Jack's known Danny longer than I have.
And I've known Danny longer than everyone.
I actually met him through the going away party when you were going to Jersey.
Oh, no shit.
Is when we first met. I think so. You had a cake with, I think, Dix on it, if I...
That was my birthday. Katie, you made me, you and Michelle made me that cake.
It was a white cake with blue
dick. It was a giant blue dick.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I was visiting maybe from New Jersey. I don't remember, but yeah. Or I was moving to Ashland. That's what it was. You're right. It was a going away party. You're right.
I was moving to Ashland. Okay. So anyway, they've known each other for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was like white frosting all over the fucking pan. Like it was jizzing everywhere.
Thank you for remembering that it was like a white cake with blue.
Wait.
Yeah.
I've blacked that out and I'm so.
That was at Alameda House. That was at the Alameda High. Ashley's house.
Yes. And we made that cake. And it was like the actual cake was the whole size of a dick.
Yeah, it was a penis-shaped cake.
And then it just had like...
It was a giant penis cake. Yeah.
For like a going away thing. It wasn't a bachelorette or like, it was like, have fun moving to Ashley.
Now that we're informed, informed adults, it was really, even funnier, I think.
And you haven't even talked about that also.
Yeah. Like, I'm gay.
You're gay. And what are your pronouns, Jack?
She, her, he. I don't know. I actually don't know. That's a good question.
Okay,
and
cool.
I don't think I know it yet. So all pronouns at the moment.
Love that answer. And that's something that we are going to be asking our guests or are trying to. But that's with you,
cool.
I think we just like launched into it. Because
we just, thank you for asking.
Yeah. Okay. So that's where your relationship started. And it sounds like that's the evolution of your relationship with alcohol as well.
Yeah.
I want to finish with the Danny story too, just so we.
Oh yeah, I didn't tell the Danny story.
So, and then we'll go to the next thing. But
yeah,
you were driving with Danny.
He got in my car and we were driving on the freeway from Eugene to Portland. He was living in South Eugene, and you have to pass a few Eugene Springfield exits before you get out of the city, right on I-5 going north. We hadn't even made it out of Eugene yet, and I almost killed a motorcyclist. He was in front of me. Driving. I was drunk. I didn't say that. I was drunk and I had smoked weed. So I was crossfaded. There was a motorcyclist in front of me and he went to, what I remember, he went to get over into the other lane and a car was coming up too fast. So he swerved back into our lane, but I had already sped up. And so he was in between our two cars as we were both speeding up the freeway. And Danny, I don't even know, I would have to cross-reference with Danny because he was sober, you know, but, that's what it felt like was happening to me. I felt like an innocent party, but anyone else would have been like, that guy's coming back into my lane, I'm gonna slow down. And I just fucking gunned it. And there was a police officer right behind me. And I got pulled over and he came up to Danny's side because we were on the freeway. And I think that's the only reason he didn't know. But he asked me, and Danny, this is Danny's favorite part of the story. I don't know why. Probably because it's the part where I didn't get arrested when I should have been arrested, but... The officer said, Danny rolled his window down and he goes, "You almost killed that motorcyclist." And I can still hear the cadence of his voice. "You almost killed that motorcyclist." And I was like, "I'm sorry." And I started rambling, trying to tell him the story I just told you about this. And I thought this. And he's like, "Have you been under the, are you under the influence of anything?" And I was like, "I wish." And Danny was like, "What in the fuck is wrong with you?" And we left and I was like, "Dude, this is scary. I'm drunk." And Danny was like, pull over. He didn't have his license and it was safer for him to fucking drive. Yeah. We still went to Portland. We didn't do the responsible thing and think, well, he doesn't have a license and Jack's blitzed. So yeah. We were like, no, we'll just keep going.
Wow. Yeah.
So I don't look back on, and even fortunately in New York, there are the subways. So you could get on the subway. So you're never alone and you can be drunk to whatever extent you'd like.
That is so
Whatever time you want.
That's so wild to me. We used to take the train to Chicago from where I grew up in Michigan, and it was crazy. You could be drinking anytime, anywhere you want to, because you're literally not responsible for driving your vehicle.
I watched a dude crack a beer open on a subway window. And I was like, my man, that is a very cool trick. I belong here.
Is that person okay?
Yeah. Hey, beer guy. That was a cool trick. Are you okay?
Beer guy.
Where is he now? All right. So that's the drinking phase. That's what you have now left behind for a year now. So.
Damn. So you mentioned that it was tummy aches that was the catalyst for change in your life. Feel free to elaborate on that. B, Bagel sitting next to me, Kaylee's little baby.
She's been such a good girl. She's been sleeping through this whole fucking thing.
So cute. So A, elaborate on that if you feel necessary. And then B, what was your course of action when you decided to quit drinking? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, I don't know how this worked out for me, but I got healthy in the pandemic. And so I was not drinking as much. I had reduced my drinking substantially with the often binge. So I wasn't drinking every day all the time. I was binging once a week and drinking wine by myself. I was smoking weed every day, all day, nonstop. You can't fucking make me not do it. Mm-hmm. So I was drinking less maybe because I could get high and that was fine. That was plenty. So I was on the path of trying to get healthy. Was trying to not feel like I was dying all the time. The stomach pain that I've had has put me in the hospital so many times where there is no explanation for what's wrong, but we're just in crippling stomach pain. I went to the emergency room in Washington out of state twice last summer because I was passing out. And it's always kind of been like that. I've always had stomach issues. I've had fucking every test. I just had a colonoscopy done. You know what I mean? That was the final thing that I haven't had done, but I had to blow into tubes for a while, eat just eggs and rice and then blow into tubes for a few days and stool samples, breath samples, I've had endoscopy. I've had everything done to figure out what's wrong with my stomach. And it's nothing.
It's environmental and stress. It's the evolution of humankind because it's happening to hundreds of thousands of people for sure. Damn.
So it just felt I don't know, I was in a what I would consider not healthy relationship, and I think that was causing a lot of my stomach pain. But I also knew that 100% of the time, every single sip of alcohol I took was poisoning me. There isn't a moment where you're taking a drink of alcohol where if you are in pain, it is going to make it better. There isn't, that's never going to, it's only ever going to make it worse. There isn't a circumstance where it's not going to make it worse. So I knew in the effort to get healthy and continue down this path of eating healthy and exercising and just trying to live in a healthy body, it had to go. And at the time it felt like an okay thing to do. I didn't feel like it was going to be a big thing, I guess, because I don't take myself, not that I don't take myself seriously, but I didn't tell myself anything. I wasn't that's that. I'm done doing that forever. Bye.
Well, I think it's almost helpful to not do that.
Because you know what? And this is what I love about Dry Hard is that there's no shame in starting over. Mm. You know what I mean? People fear relapse so much because of the implications that you're just going to spiral out of control and it's going to end your life. Mm. And the reality is that's possible, you get to start over, and that's the fucking great thing about sobriety.
Yeah, like every day, it, like more language is just
like, yeah. Well, and not putting so much pressure on yourself to be perfect, because I fear that with sobriety that like, so I've been sober for 1 year, and I smoked weed the first 4 months of my sobriety, and I still count myself sober for a year. Because this is what I meant when I said I'm going to be sober. I meant alcohol, because alcohol is unmanageable for me. And it has been my whole life. Mm-hmm. Weed is something I don't want to do. And I don't want to do it because it makes me lazy. But it doesn't hurt me.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not causing me pain. It's not making me into a monster. It's hindering me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So that's when I decided I was going to get sober. It was 4 months into my sobriety. Before that, I would say it was Monday last year, 2 days after I got sober. I went to my first AA group. And because the girl that I was dating at the time, my girlfriend at the time, her father was in AA for 15 years. And he had just had his 15-year sober birthday. And he talked about it. She talked about how it saved their family. And they just encouraged me to go. I also had a therapist, and still have the same therapist, Sam, who was in the program for a long time, Narcotics Anonymous, and he knows so much about the program. And he just, the encouragement to go to AA to get support, I cannot be more grateful for that encouragement, because for me, my experience is it has only made me better. It has only helped me through the hard times. And there's a lot of stigma around AA. And there's a lot of bullshit in AA.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, the importance I found, the first meeting I went to was a gay men's.
Yeah, I was going to say, tell us about how you meeting explored, what worked for you, what didn't work for you. And, like, maybe just for some of our listeners who are considering AA, like, what did that process look like for you? How did you find your meeting, you know?
Yeah. So I didn't really know what to do. And I got help through my therapist, or I was encouraged through my therapist to look for groups where I could meet people, where I could make friends. Mm. Because I was new to Portland. I just moved back to Portland. I was living on the road and I got road tripping for 4 months. The world that I lived in Portland previously was completely different. All of my friends had moved on. Kaylee's living, nesting with her boyfriend, and all of my other friends had moved away, and the city was fucking terrifying, and we were still in pandemic closures and lockdowns, and it just wasn't the place I left. And so it felt really isolating and it felt really lonely. And he was like, why don't you start going to groups? My therapist, start going to groups, you're going to make friends, because then you'll build foundation, and that is the safest thing for you to do in your sobriety. And so I Googled gay AA.
Gay.
So I was like, well, if I'm making friends, I want to meet lesbos because I'm a lesbo.
Yes.
And what happened was I showed up to Lunch Bunch, a gay men's group.
Yes.
And I sat in the back row. And it's so funny because I went today. I still go to that same group. And I went today and I told this story too, that I went and I sat in the back row and I had a baseball cap on pulled down over my eyes and my sweatshirt up over my head. And I sat with my arms folded in the back, and, you know, they make you round up, and somebody's like, they ask, you know, who's in their first 30 days of sobriety? Is anyone new to this group? Is anyone in their first, second, or third? And I qualified for all that shit. I was like, yes, I'm in my first 30 days. I'm new to this group. And this is my very first meeting. And so they were like, will you share first? And I was like, cause they round up, you're staring at all the other people staring at you. You're in a circle looking at a bunch of old white dudes who have been coming to this group for years and years and know each other. And I'm this fucking twinky little white girl who's just like, I said, I don't know what to do. And they were like, well, you can just tell us why you're here or talk about something you're thinking about. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And they were like, I do not have to. Can a few people go so you get an idea? And then maybe we circle back around to you and you change your mind and go. And I was like, yeah. Oh. Okay.
Did you start crying at that moment or after?
Okay. Thank you for asking.
I'm crying right now.
Yeah. And a few people went and I got the gist. Sometimes, there's a person at the beginning of every meeting who talks for 10 minutes. They're the chairperson. I was just asked to chair my very first fucking meeting on the 26th, on Danny's birthday, on the 26th of October. But they came back around to me, and I was, and my first response at this point was, do I have to say my name? Do I have to say that? And they were like, I mean, it's tradition. I was like, I'm not going to do that. Because I didn't think alcoholic at the time was like, A, how fucking dare you?
Yeah. You take out your butterfly knife.
Yeah. I have so many knives on me, and you're looking at all of them. You don't even know they're there. You can't even see them. My dad used to say to me that I was the drinker. He used to say to everyone that I was the drinker of the family, because we'd have a holiday and I would have a very hard time sitting with my family, and I would get wasted. And I did it at every holiday event. Every time I went to visit them, they had a beer drawer in the fridge, and I would just get drunk. And my dad would say, you're the drinker of the family. And he would also say, when I wanted to get sober, what do you think you need to do this? Like, why do you feel like you need to do this? So I was under the impression that I'm a drinker. I'm a substance abuser. I'm not a fucking alcoholic. Those people are way different.
Yeah, that's a disease.
That's a disease, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So for a long time, I didn't say it. And I was like, I'm Jack, and I am at Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here because I don't want to be an alcoholic, because I just want to drink and mind my fucking business, and I don't want it to be a problem. I want to be like everybody else who can just get drunk and not be an alcoholic. I want this to go away.
That anger is so real.
I feel that.
Especially in the beginning.
Everyone in the room who's been sober from 2 weeks to 25 years was like,
yeah, same.
Been there. Yeah. I left the meeting and I cried for 8 hours straight. Just like heaving without stopping for 8 full hours.
Do you think it was like a release? Like it was like a relief, or was it just like a
I felt
like
weak.
Yeah.
I felt weak. I felt embarrassed and disappointed and ashamed. I felt so much shame. But I also felt an overwhelming sense of loneliness.
Yeah.
I'm so alone that I have to go to a room full of strangers to feel support. Mm-hmm. And it was just hollow. It felt so bad. And I didn't go back to that meeting for probably 6 months because I found a women in charge. I started going Googling women AA because though I love gay AA, I would rather have, I want to be around women, gay or straight, whatever you're, or like femme presenting people or people who have the experience of being socialized as a girl, because that's a lot of where I hold my anger. Yeah. Is my socialization. So I started going to an online group, Women in Trans group, and I love it. And I've gone, not, I wouldn't say every week for the last 8 months, but I've gone pretty consistently. And the group is just so great. I think a lot of what people are afraid of with AA is having to confront religion. And I don't fucking do that. And we don't do that. We don't do that. Go to a gay meeting, straight up. You're not going to meet people thumping Bibles on your head, okay? Because, like, nobody's doing that in gay meetings. We all have our higher power, and you get to choose. A lot of people in groups choose the group as the higher power. Because you get... And I was thinking about it today, because I think my takeaway... This has been a really hard year. They talk about how first year of sobriety is really hard on you. It's like when you're going through a traumatic experience and you don't realize it's traumatic until you have a little bit of space from it. And look back and go, I was tense, I was sad, I was hurt the whole entire time. And I swapped alcohol and weed for lying to myself and shutting people out and hiding. I isolated the whole entire year. And that's like, in AA, they talk about how that's very typical and it's the thing you do not want to do.
Totally.
Get out and go to a meeting. If you're isolating, go to a meeting. But I'm thinking about it today because I spoke in AA on Wednesday night and I was just saying stupid shit. I was just stuff coming out of my mouth because I wasn't prepared. And they usually call, if it's your like anniversary of any kind, months or years, they'll usually call me first to like, share. And I wasn't prepared. I was a little manic this week and I was just fucking spewing bullshit. I don't even know what I was saying. And I finished and had to go through everyone else talking about, saying really like mean things about this, you know, and was like, I totally didn't even get the fucking point of this meeting. Like I'm hearing what they're saying and I'm like, oh yeah, that was the point of this meeting. that's what the speaker was trying to convey. And I was talking about myself the whole time, just my selfishness and my 1 year sobriety. And I'm going to be in a fucking podcast. I wish you could hear me in my AA. I'm going to be on a fucking podcast this week. And I couldn't even focus on what everybody else was saying because I was so ashamed of myself, so embarrassed. I like turned off my camera for a few minutes. So I was like, I can't even look at my, I do not want to be perceived. I'm so humiliated with what I said. And I shared, they let me share a little bit longer today. And I had only slightly more control over what I was saying because it's just overwhelming to share in front of a room of people, you know? But when I was finished and I was listening to everyone else, I realized the thing that I am missing most in my life is being authentic to the me before alcohol and the me before the person I was told I was. Me before all the bullshit. I don't even, I've put layers and layers and layers of fucking shit over that person. And I don't think I know who she is. I don't think, that's why when you said, Jack, tell me who you are. I was like, I'm haunted. I'm haunted. That's who I am. I'm
one of our listeners and a friend that I friend on the internet, but we went to elementary school together in Michigan. She messaged me today. She's in Seattle with some of her drinking friends. She's been sober for 30 days and she messaged me today and she said, it's just crazy. Like they don't know what to talk about or what to do when they're not drinking. And I was like, well, that's the thing. When you have alcohol as a common denominator, you don't know, you don't have to know who you are, or what you like, because it's just like adding that social salve, as Amy Merrill called it. It adds it to the lubrication to any situation and you can just fucking let it rip, right? Like we just lie.
Yeah.
So you were talking about how you realized that this year, it's taken you a year to really understand that you don't know like who you are without all of this that you put on top of it, right? So how did that revelation come to be? What does that look like for you now? Like, tell me more about that.
I think that in isolation, the thing that you desire, at least for me, was community, you know? But as I'm making friends, I realize that I am anxious all the time because I have to tell people about me for the first time. And I have to explain things. And I don't have to explain myself to you too. I don't have to tell you what kind of person I am. People aren't asking me often, isn't saying to me, Jack, who are you? You know?
Yeah.
But every new person that you meet when you move to a city asks you, who are you? And I was just making it up because I don't know.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that so much. But what I will say is when I was drinking, I felt like a shell of a person. Like there were like little robots in my eyes just moving my body forward because I don't feel alive. I don't feel inside myself. I don't feel like I've been looking at a person in the mirror and seeing something that I recognize. And through sobriety, like Jesus fucking Christ, if you're looking for a way to find yourself, get sober. Damn. Yeah.
Or like looking for a way to realize you don't know yourself.
Yeah. I guess that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went through withdrawals. I don't think I've said that yet, but when I quit smoking weed in month 4, I went through withdrawals and I lost my job over it.
You haven't said that. And I'm so glad you lost your job there. I hated the Wiener Place.
This was like, there's no hot dog place tomorrow. You should come.
Why? For to be around a bunch of people drinking beer.
And eating hot dogs?
Yeah. Vegetarian, by the way.
Yes, I've been a vegetarian for like 22. Yeah. I have absolutely nothing to do with hot dogs. Okay. So far removed from me.
Besides the fact that you fucking worked there for.
Yeah. That was how I was paying my bills. I went through withdrawals and I couldn't like walk for a couple weeks. I was going back and forth to the doctor. What she kept saying, your body's adjusting to having those substances for the first time in 14 years. But what she meant was, you're going through withdrawals, ho. Like,
would that be considered post-acute withdrawal syndrome?
I think so.
Withdrawal from the substance. So like it's
correct.
After. I don't actually know a lot about pause. But I should familiarize myself more.
Well, and I don't either. And I think that that's why she specifically wasn't saying. Well, maybe that's why she wasn't saying withdrawals. Also, she's not an addiction doctor. So
yeah,
she's
like doctors are like, she's my they fucking, don't have an education like my, around that except for like the one chapter.
Or anything. Yeah. She's like, I can tell you what drug will possibly fix whatever I think you might have. That's what doctors do.
So here's $500.
Yeah. and Xanax. I'm like, I came in for a yeast infection.
And also, make sure you chug this with a glass of wine before you take your fucking...
Yeah. but, yeah, she was saying, I was like, I've been sober for 4 months. Why is withdrawals happening now? And she's like, you're sober now. And I'm like, weed? I have withdrawals from weed?
You should have asked her if she's sober. That's what you should have done.
Yeah, like, what are your qualifications?
Did you smoke weed?
That's what I should have said. She's been like, I'm an MD. And I'm like, MD in addiction? I don't think so.
MD in my life? No. Yeah. Anyway,
so you go through the process of learning about yourself in new, different ways. And what I found was that the person that I am is one that I don't like because she's hard to keep up.
What do you mean by that?
I was thinking about this. I made a new friend in the last couple months, and I really, really cherish the friendship we're building. And I wanted to, she was the first person to text me this morning. It was like, happy 1 year sober day. I'm so proud of you. Aww. And it meant the fucking world to me because, yeah, Randy just texted me. He's like, I'm proud of you.
And it meant so much to me when you told me that on my 1 year too, by the way.
Yeah, right? And like, and only because we know what it, I didn't realize it was a big deal until I was sitting in the AA today. And it's like, oh my God, every day? I was present every day, you know? I think that I wanted to call Randy and just tell her what AA was like today and like, just talk on the phone because I was cleaning my house. And I was also stressing out about all the life that's happening beyond sobriety right now. And I didn't call her because I don't know. She doesn't know me like that. We talked on the phone yesterday, but I mean, like, she doesn't know me like calling and being annoying. That's subjective.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, intimate relationships are not annoying, but it's really scary to take them there.
Yeah. And I realized that other than the people who have been there forever, you know, all of you, no one knows me because I've been lying about myself to myself and running from myself because I've always been told I was something different than I am. I was always told, don't be this kind of a woman or don't be this kind of a girl or you are this kind of a woman and you are this kind of a woman. And so I never formed my own decisions about myself. I never built trust in myself. The decisions that I was making, I'm making a yes choice. And it's good. It's good enough for me to make that choice. Because I would make a choice and I would let someone tell me if it was good enough. Or I'd let someone else make a choice.
Their response to it would be the choice that you would choose, right? Like if you would get that feedback, then you're like, oh, I made the good choice.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. And so that's what, I mean, unless this is your first day, that's textbook people pleasing. You know what I mean? Like, that's what all of us experience when we're people pleasing is lying about ourselves to make other people feel a specific way about us.
I think that I like to take it one more step because I think that people pleasing is very valid, but to the point of codependency where we're forming our relationships based on that aspect so that we trust that the person sitting across from us can hold us as we are, as is accepted by them. Because if I show you my whole self, will you be there? Can you hold?
Oh, them? Yeah.
No.
And you know what's crazy is what I'm thinking about lately is that I think we all know that I think specifically us know this, that not every friend that you make can be everything that you need from a friend.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Same with partners. Same with like,
oh, everything. Absolutely.
Those expectations are so.
Sup, polyamory. Just saying. Ups, we see you. We respect you. Expecting every person to show up and be everything for you is an enormous expectation and it is an easy way to get let down. But I think the same about just reflecting back on myself, showing up and being everything for people is a massive expectation on yourself. So you will always hate yourself.
Yes. And on the same token, we can't also expect everything from ourselves for ourselves. We need community care.
Oh, absolutely. Like, absolutely.
Are so important. Friendships are so important.
Yeah.
All ranges.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like a huge part of this, and I think for you too, which is so cool to watch.
Yeah, thank you. I blacked out like 17 minutes ago. That's what I was thinking in AA today, is that it's obvious. It's in the fucking name. It's a support group, right? That is literally what it is. It's a support group. But it's therapy, where you are not the only... What I struggle with therapy is being the central focus, because I can't lie to my fucking therapist. I can, but that keeping up the fakeness that I give everyone else around me. And it's not that I'm like making these grand lies about myself. It's that I'm not letting people know that I'm not well. I'm not letting people know that I'm stressed. I'm not giving people an opportunity to hold me the way I need to be held.
Yes.
I'm not giving people the benefit of the doubt that they can meet me where I need them. I'm already saying you can't, and so I will only give you this much. And that is
that is everything. I just wrote about that in like group work. Like doing group work, like allowing people to witness you is just as important as holding space for other people. And like, you can't always be the one holding space for everyone. We have to open up and allow that.
Call back to what, 2 months ago I called Katie and was like, I was just diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I'm not 9 months into my sobriety, and that we can't figure out. Well, we had no idea all these years. I had no idea all these years. I just thought I was a fucking psychopath and was like, I identify with that. That is perfect. Like, fine. I'm an alcoholic. I'm angry. And I'm a little unhinged. And all of that felt like me. That I identified. Yeah, I identified with that, because then when people told me who I was, I could be like, yeah, that's fucking right. I am. I am dangerous to myself. And I will probably suck you into a black hole. Yeah, fuck you. You're right. You know?
Showing up and being, we were talking about this with Amy a little bit. It was like showing up and being like, I'm great and I'm a good person and you should love me, and here are all the ways that I benefit you. It's like, that's way too more scary and way more vulnerable to show up because you're taking away like the fear of rejection when you're
absolutely coming at it from,
that's
exactly what it is. It's and like, pardon my human, you know, of being afraid that the reason I am hiding is because of how specifically I was rejected. Mm-hmm. So trying to show up and know that the possibility of rejection is out there is fucking impossible.
So the next step, right, is like, I feel that this is coming. Like, I feel like it's taken a year of being alcohol free. And also for me, I like am so here with this conversation. It's like, how do we not show up that way? Like, is it creating safety in our body and like learning that we're safe no matter what or who the fuck is around? Like, we are love, we are accepted, we are lovable the way that we are. Like, how do we do that?
That's the, that's the fucking $1 million question.
It's like quitting drinking felt like the first step.
It did. And I think for me, and for, I hope other people out there, go to a meeting, find the group that you feel at home, go and find a group of people who speak to you when you're sitting there and listening to people's stories. It's therapy. It's therapy where you are not the center of it. It's like going to a self-care or self-help, like convention.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
You just sit there and people tell you how this is working for them, why it's hard. It's free. It's free. You know what I mean? It's, a lot of them gave you coffee and cookies. Yeah. You get paid to fucking go to this shit. You know what I mean? So like, I'm just saying, going to a meeting and being vulnerable, that is the place where you can be, where you can say, I'm going to be on a podcast when you're sober, because nobody's going to judge you if they've seen worse. They've been worse.
Yeah. And they're probably actually really excited for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're probably like, you did this and now you're going to celebrate it with your friends on a podcast. Like, the fun.
Yeah. And like, that's kind of what Amy brought to our attention when she was on last week, was that like, what we're doing is creating community care also.
Like, absolutely.
And if it's not an AA meeting, if it's not an NA meeting, there's so many meetings on Instagram. There's meetings on Reframe app. Soberish just started doing meetings that are on Zoom. Steph M still has hers too. Like, there's fucking like everywhere. And you can meeting hop. Absolutely. You can go to as many different ones as you want.
Oh, yeah. There's, I will say, in person, for meetings like AA, there's Al-Anon, which is just another thing. It's different than AA. Yeah, and there's Ben's Friends, which I think might be more service industry related.
Oh, cool. Ben's Friends?
There's Ben's Friends. Portland has a group. It's not like AA where you just find it at a church any day, any time. So you have to go online and kind of search where they're having the meetings and how many different groups there are. But I learned about that from a chef at the sausage restaurant who's sober. Oh, yeah. He and the sous chef were sober and they go to Ben's Friends. And so there's different types that you can try all of them. The Alano Club downtown has meetings, all types of meetings, Sex Addicts Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, codependency, absolutely.
I've heard really good things about the, I don't know what they call them, CODA, Codependency Anonymous,
anyway, and I think if you're a member, there's a gym there, and they have all kinds of different services, too, and yeah, you can find a meeting with the people that you identify with at any time of day, online if you don't want to be in person, or I really crave, like, in-person interaction.
Yeah.
So I would say going to a meeting is a good one, learning to be inside yourself, and I think the thing that I'm trying to focus on, I'm, like, a Sagittarius.
You're lucky and free.
And I don't want 2 days, any 2 days to be the same. I want some fucking psycho thing every single day, and I want it to be different every day. I want to live like the most extreme that I can, and I don't want to do it twice, you know?
Which makes you such a great friend to have, because I get so stuck in like my monotony, and I get to this point where I'm like, I feel so off and so horrible, and I don't know what I need. And you're like, let's go to Hood River and do the Fruit Loop and like go do these things. And I'm like, that's exactly what I fucking needed.
Everyone needs a friend like that.
Because then you come to us and we're like, I just don't feel like leaving the house today.
I need a reality check from time to time. But I just mean that I have these massive lists. I have these massive lists of things I want to do and experiences I want to have, things I want to learn, books I want to read, movies I want to watch, people I want to be. And that's the one where after these last few days, I'm looking at these lists going half measures. I can't be on a path of self-discovery, of trying to go back to the person I was before all the judgment, before all the shame, before all the alcohol, before all the drugs. I can't look back on this person and kind of excavate for what is authentic to me. And all of these things are new too, because I'm not 16, I'm not 14 anymore, I'm 32 years old. What do I like?
Yeah.
What is an absolute yes for me? What are my fucking values?
Dude.
I have no idea what my values are. The person that I used to be, where I would get in a car and drive to LA to rescue a friend who didn't have a passport. The person I would be to jump on a plane to go anywhere for anyone who needed help. She was an alcoholic. I don't know her. I don't do that shit anymore. And it makes me ashamed of myself that I wouldn't do anything for everyone.
Oh, but to me, I'm like, that sounds like a person who like has unhealthy boundaries.
Yeah. And it is. You know? And that's what I mean, is that like, I want to know what I would actually, who am I responding to my friends in crisis now? Who am I responding to criticism or judgment or people telling me who I am? Because before, I would fly off the fucking handle and make a scene and make a fool of myself, you know? Who am I with all of these new decisions? And how could I possibly be trying to find those things out if I have a list of the perfect me, of the perfect person that someday I'm going to be? How am I looking at every situation going, would the Jack that I'm supposed to be do that?
Right. Like, how are you going to find who you are when you're trying to emulate characters you've written down on a piece of paper? Like, that's not...
And you know what the shitty thing is? The characters have always been likable. And that's what's scary, is that I've never liked me. And the only frame of reference I have for authentic me is this shitty relationship I have when I'm washing all these characters off at night. You know what I mean?
I love that.
Having to say to myself, no one else will like me because I hate doing this. I'm so afraid of not putting on these masks that I won't call my friend who first thing in the morning she thought of me on this very special day And I won't call her and talk to her about how I'm having anxiety about going to AA because I have to stand up in front of everyone and say I've been sober for a year, which is a very yay thing. And I'm just having anxiety about it for whatever reason. You know, like, she would be fucking thrilled to get that phone call. You know what I mean?
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. And like, that is, I mean, that sounds like the call, right? That's the next step, is like creating intimacy in those relationships that are meaningful. They see, like, that would say to me that, like, your relationship with Randy is important to you.
Yeah.
And you get to show up in the present now as this Jack, and that's what she would do.
And giving her the benefit of the doubt that she is trustworthy.
Mm.
Like, allowing me to give her space to be trusted, because she can break it. She has, that's well within her power, but that's not my fucking business today.
And if that's the worst that happens, you will be okay. You'll be fucking fine.
Fuck yeah.
Deuces.
Or not even deuces. Like, oh, you're a human and you broke my trust. And do you want to work on this and become closer and deeper friends in this?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's better than
that. Yeah.
But we have lots of options, right? Like, we get to take relationships to another level when we're willing to be with all of it. Like, by removing the opportunity for her to even hold that space for you, like, you don't even find out if she's trustworthy.
Yeah.
And, like, people are not fucking trustworthy, like, inherently. Like, we're not perfect. We make mistakes all the time.
Tell me a secret and it will no longer be a secret. That's all I'm saying.
Same,
tell me your secrets.
Dude, I'm a Scorpio, and they always say that, like, I will hold on to a secret until it's, like, the fucking perfect time to drop the secret. And
oh, yeah, you are that all day, baby. That is so funny.
Well, shit. Jack, if you feel like, just to kind of, we covered so much good stuff.
I know. I just want to keep talking for forever.
I know. I know.
This is like speaking to my soul.
I feel like, even though you are still like figuring out who you are and how you want to show up in the world, I think there's still a lot of people that would relate to that and the things that you shared today. And I just want to, like, you already mentioned going to a meeting, but do you have any like last words? Do you have any final little droplets or like something that you're really looking forward to now that you've gotten a year under your belt, so that maybe we can have an episode in another year and like check back in and hold you accountable?
You should be just our resident guest. So whenever we don't have another guest, you're coming back on to talk with us.
First, before I answer that question, it was probably 2016 and I got a letter one day. And it said, the person that you don't know you are is better than a lot of the people who do know who they are. And I kept it.
Oh my gosh.
Because I'll find it every once in a while, and it just like, hey, that was a really, really important thing for me to say to me. Because I know who I am. Sometimes I just need to hear the people that I love tell me whatever it is okay. I'm dry eye in the house. Also, Michelle's over there just sobbing.
Yeah. Also, like, I feel like there's so much permission in that. Like, just like, we don't have to
know. You don't have to know. And it's okay.
And that's so funny, too, because I think I even said this in this episode. It's like, yeah, we're getting sober so we can be authentic and, like, know who we are. But, like, we're actually fucking not. Like, because we are going to be reevaluating and evolving our entire lives. Like, what is the point of this experience if we don't get to just unapologetically fucking change all of this? I'm so afraid of it. I'm so afraid of it. Like, what are they going to think if I change? What are, you know, like, the nameless and the faceless, the people who don't even exist that we just talk about to scare ourselves into staying the same? Yeah, that's so powerful. So thank you, Kaylee, for writing Jack that note in 2016. Ooh, Jack, if anyone wants to find you after this, where can they find you?
Do you want people to find you?
I do. I just don't know if I know my... Is it Jacqueline Max?
We'll put it in the show notes.
Put it in the show notes. I think it's Jacqueline Max. Jacqueline Max.
Perfect. And then for those of you listening to, Jack would never hype herself up in this way, but she is also a writer. That is part of the many hats that she wears. And you can check out a couple of the things that she's written. I'm sure there's a way to do that. Yeah.
Maybe it's on Medium. It's on Medium, but I don't know my Medium link either.
We'll figure it out.
Jacqueline Max, probably. Okay. Jack Max, Jacqueline Max. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, this was super fun. I don't know if I answered your question, but
you did. It was perfect.
Get a sponsor. Go to a meeting. Get a sponsor. There are people out there who want you to be the person that you can.
Yay!
Fucking brilliant.